Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, as a fifth woman comes forward against Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore, he doubles down on claims of a Democratic conspiracy. And Mitch McConnell says, "I believe the women." And how YouTube is being used to game the news. It's Tuesday, November 14th.
I'm here today with a very brave woman from Alabama who alleges that when she was a minor, that she was sexually assaulted by Roy Moore.
Cheryl K. Stolberg, tell us about this latest allegation against Roy Moore on Monday.
This latest allegation came from Beverly Young Nelson. She was a 16-year-old girl in the small county where Roy Moore was the district attorney in the 1970s. He was twice her age, and she appeared at the press conference in which she laid out a series of events, what happened between her and Roy Moore.
When I was 15 years old, I began working after school.
She worked in a restaurant as a waitress.
Mr. Roy Moore was a regular customer. He came in almost every night, and he would stay until closing time.
When he was at the restaurant, she said, he would speak to her, and sometimes he would be flirtatious.
And would sometimes pull the ends of my long hair as I walked by him. I had red hair down to my waist. He would compliment me on my looks.
Beverly Young Nelson turned 16 in November of that year, 1977, and about a month later, she got her yearbook from the high school where she had spent her freshman and sophomore years, and she brought it to work with her, and she put it down one night at the end of the counter. And she said that Roy Moore happened to notice it, and he asked if he could write in it, and she felt very flattered, and she said yes.
He wrote in my yearbook as follows, "To a sweeter, more beautiful girl. I could not say Merry Christmas. Christmas 1977. Love, Roy Moore, Old Hickory House." And it signed it, Roy Moore, D.A.
A week or two later, she said, she was working at the restaurant and her shift ended at 10 p.m. that night when the restaurant closed and it was cold.
And I went outside to wait for my boyfriend to pick me up and drive me home. My boyfriend was late, and Mr. Moore exited the restaurant at the same time as I did.
And saw that she was waiting and offered to give her a ride home.
I trusted Mr. Moore because he was the district attorney. I thought that he was simply doing something nice by offering to drive me home.
And she said that her house was only about 2.5 miles away from the restaurant, and she expected that Roy Moore would just drive her there, but instead...
He stopped the car, and he parked his car in between the dumpster and the back of the restaurant, where there were no lights.
And while parked, she said...
Mr. Moore reached over and began groping me. Him putting his hands on my breast. I tried to open my car door to leave, but he reached over and he locked it so I could not get out.
He also tried, she said, to pull her shirt off.
He began squeezing my neck, attempting to force my head onto his crotch.
At a certain point, he gave up.
He said, "You're just a child." And he said, "I am the district attorney of Etowah County. And if you tell anyone about this, no one will ever believe you."
And finally, he allowed her to open the car door and she either fell out or he pushed her out.
The day after Mr. Moore assaulted me, I called the restaurant and I quit my job. I never went back there again.
And she told no one about this until 2 years later.
I was scared. I felt that if I told anyone that Mr. Moore would do something to me or my family.
She told her husband of 13 years before they got married, and she said that about 4 years ago, she told her mother what had happened.
And I am coming forward today to let Mr. know, that I want to know Mr. Moore to know that he no longer has any power over me, and I no longer live in fear of him.
And so this woman, Beverly Young Nelson, becomes the fifth woman to allege that Roy Moore pursued her sexually, in this case, assaulted her when she was a teenager, right?
That's right.
And what happened on Monday with Republican senators and Senate leadership like Mitch McConnell? It seemed like a day where people started to draw more definitive lines in the sand around these allegations.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Michael. I actually talked to Mitch McConnell on Friday, and on Friday, his position was that if the accusations were true, Roy Moore should step aside.
Mm-hmm.
But Monday, Mr. McConnell took a different tack.
I think he should step aside.
That Roy Moore should leave the race.
Is the burden on Moore to prove these false versus someone to prove that these are true in this situation? Or do you believe these allegations to be true?
I believe the women, yes.
The Republican establishment never supported Roy Moore long before this. Roy Moore is a renegade. Roy Moore is someone who has made racist and homophobic statements. He's a former Chief Justice of Alabama who was twice kicked out of his chief justiceship.
Right.
So he's an incredibly controversial character. He is somebody who is not going to follow Mitch McConnell's lead.
And yet for Trump Republicans, Moore's become something of a candidate of choice, right?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is a real divide between Alabama and Washington Republicans.
Hmm.
And the base, the Trump base, the populist base, they love Roy Moore. And, you know, Mitch McConnell is the new boogeyman for Trump Republicans. They want to get rid of Mitch McConnell. So anything that Mitch McConnell says carries absolutely no weight with the Trump base of the Republican Party. And that's Roy Moore's constituency right now.
I want to address what's been brought out on television today.
So with the Republican establishment now coming out forcefully against Roy Moore and another woman coming forward with very specific allegations, what is Roy Moore saying?
Roy Moore is defiant.
And I can tell you without hesitation, this is absolutely false. I never did what she said I did. I don't even know the woman. I don't know anything about her. I don't even know where the restaurant is or was.
He says he's running, and he's certainly not going to let Mitch McConnell stop him.
Because I'm 11 points ahead, or 10 or 11 points ahead, this race being just 28 days off, that this is a political maneuver and has nothing to do with reality. It's all about politics.
And if Moore does not drop out of the race, what does Mitch McConnell see as his options for dealing with that?
They can possibly run a write-in candidate. And Mitch McConnell said today that that was an option that they were considering. Then, you know, they have to cross the next bridge and see what happens if he gets elected. And then they'll have to figure out, well, do they seat him or do they try to block him from being seated? And there are procedural ways that you could do that. I think we haven't really gone down that road of exploring those ways just yet. Or if they don't block him from being seated, do they seat him and then move to expel him?
Hmm.
A senator has not been expelled, I'm told, since the days of the Civil War.
Wow.
So that would obviously be very serious.
Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times. and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the Extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
I use New York Times cooking at least 3 to 4 times a week.
I love sheet pan bibimbap. It said 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes.
The cucumber salad with soy, ginger, and garlic. Oh my God, that is just to die for.
This turkey chili has over 17,000 5-star ratings. So easy, so delicious.
The instructions are so clear, so simple, and it just works.
Hey, it's Eric Kim from New York Times Cooking. Come cook with us. Go to nytcooking.com.
So last Sunday, after the Sutherland Springs church shooting, as the news was unfolding, I went to YouTube to see what searching for Texas church shooting would bring up.
Kevin Roos covers technology for the Times.
Maybe 5 or 6 of the top 10 videos that came up were not professionally produced news segments. They were just these guys.
All right, guys, brand new information is coming in. Some dude in Texas shot up a church in some tiny little town. It seems clear to me that this guy is a liberal terrorist, if you will, trying to exact revenge on white conservative American churchgoers.
I think it's likely that our government is the one actually perpetrating these terror attacks against the American people.
I have 100% proof here that he's far leftist. Take these images and everything I'm giving you and save them somewhere. And if you like this stuff, you know, make sure to like and comment, subscribe. I do these kind of things all the time. So
kind of amateur shock jock productions where men, usually men, are talking into the camera, giving their theories about what exactly happened.
You said 5 or 6 of the top 10. So basically half of the content at the top of the, of basically YouTube's charts are from amateur people posting what they think in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of crazy when you put it like that. I mean, imagine if you turned on the TV to find out, you know, breaking news and channels 1 through 20 were just, you know, the crazy guy from the subway, you know, talking about his theories. And then you got to the real news 20 channels later.
We would love to introduce you to America's anchorman, E.T. Williams. He is known all around America as the doctor of common sense.
One of the first videos that I found was by this guy, Elmer Williams, who's sort of an amateur newscaster who is a 51-year-old guy from Houston, Texas. He used to work as a hazardous materials operations manager.
Hello and welcome to Common Sense Nation. I'm your host, the doctor of common sense.
And he is an African-American Christian conservative who has made something like 10,000 videos for YouTube.
So please join us on tonight and Wednesday also.
And all these videos basically follow the same format. It's him in front of what I assume is a green screen in his home studio with his aviator sunglasses on. And he's just talking about the news, and he superimposes on the green screen photos or sort of video from whatever the news event is. So it looks like a very low budget sort of public access type newscast.
When the last time you saw a liberal from CNN waving an American flag? That is the question on the table, damn it.
And what is Elmer Williams saying about the shooting at the church?
Well, the first video that he made after the shooting was before there was any information about the suspect or what had happened. And so he said, you know, based on what we know, I think this guy is either a black person or a Muslim.
So this is just pure conjecture.
Pure conjecture. Nothing behind this. And then a couple hours later, after the suspect had been identified as Devin Kelly, who is white, he released another video.
We got an update on the shooter.
Saying,
this piece of crap right here, 26-year-old white male, Bernie Sanders supporter,
who is in league with Antifa, this sort of left-wing protest group, and has maybe converted to Islam.
I have not seen the report yet to prove that, but I'm just seeing if I'm looking at a picture. Because sometimes you can tell a lot from a person's picture.
Kevin, why is what seems like manufactured or, as it happens, blatantly false information about this shooting appearing as a top result in your searches and the searches of so many other YouTube users?
There's no rule on YouTube against saying something that's not true. Part of it is just the nature of YouTube's algorithm, which displays videos not in the order that they were created, but in terms of something called relevance, which we don't know exactly what that means, mm-hmm. but it's essentially keywords that appear in the headline, the size of the page, the number of viewers it has. So in this case, what Elmer had done was effectively bypass the algorithm by making his videos very quickly.
Hmm.
So, you know, an hour or two after a big news event, if you put up a video, you have a much better chance of appearing higher in the search results because ABC, CBS, NBC, those sort of professional quality videos take time. You have to, you know, for example, fact check them. And so it might take them a few hours to get something up on their YouTube page. But in the meantime, some of these amateurs will have slipped in their videos.
So because Elmer Williams got his video out very quickly in a slapdash manner, he got a much bigger audience.
Yeah. I mean, he is sort of a shoot first, fact check later kind of guy. I mean, he is really out there a lot. And as a result, he's built up a pretty large audience. He told me that he's gotten something like 200 million views on all of his videos.
This is the report. Oh, this is scandalous. I'm telling you, this video may get deleted from YouTube.
So his most popular video of all time, which got about 1.6 million views, was a video in which he said that
Barack Obama and Michelle are involved in this homosexual scheme.
Barack and Michelle Obama had both come out of the closet.
Dressed up with lipstick. Yes, he is.
That is not true.
That is not, that is for the record, that is not true.
I may be in trouble for even reporting this one.
One of his other most popular videos was about Hillary Clinton being on crack cocaine, which got something like 600,000 views. So these are very far-fetched, kind of tabloidy things. In some cases, he's not making them up. He's getting them from other websites, but his role is sort of the bemused commentator.
So these claims are not true, any of the things that you've just said, that he reported in his YouTube videos. But he nevertheless sees himself as a kind of reporter, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I called him because I wanted to know why he does this mm-hmm. and what he gets out of it. And he said, basically, I see myself as a reporter for the common man. I'm finding truths that no one else will tell, and people like it.
Anybody who knows me can tell you this. If I let somebody get away with something, or if I take a stand and I know it, I don't really believe in my heart, I don't even sleep well at night.
Does YouTube pay Williams for these videos that you're describing? Is this a profitable full-time gig?
Yeah, he quit his job to make videos full-time. He was invited into YouTube's partner program, which essentially allows channel owners to make money from their videos by showing ads alongside them.
And how much money are we talking about?
Well, it's hard to know, but he said that he had made as much as $10,000 a month.
Wow. So this seems to speak pretty directly to this larger debate going on right now.
On Monday, Facebook disclosed as many as 126 million users were exposed to the political advertisements bought by a Russian-linked company.
They posted 1,100 videos on YouTube for about 40 hours of content.
Google has been requested to appear in front of the committee to talk about this.
Most of these companies have been sort of free speech maximalists. Hmm. They've said in the past, you know, we don't want to censor any views. We are not here to determine who's right and who's wrong, and we're not going to do a very active job of moderating what goes on. That's changed in recent months.
As director of law enforcement and information security at Google,
I think partly because of the public pressure surrounding the Russia stuff.
We understand that any misuse of our platforms for this purpose can be very serious.
We've now seen these companies be questioned by Congress about this, but also partly because I think there's been a growing sort of self-awareness among these companies that they may have created this machine that has allowed bad actors to take advantage of it.
And how has YouTube in particular talked about its role and responsibility in monitoring this content?
YouTube, like Facebook and Twitter and every other social network, has a team of humans who are reviewing things that are flagged as being violations of the community guidelines, things like nudity, hateful content, violent or graphic content, harassment and cyberbullying. And so they've sort of used that as a crutch to say, well, you know, if you violate any of these policies, we have the right to take down your video. But they have been sort of missing a lot. I mean, there's a lot that's going unmonitored and unchecked.
And do they acknowledge that this is a problem?
Yeah, and they say that we'll do better. We're building tools. YouTube now says it's using artificial intelligence to flag certain videos as being violations of the guidelines. But I think right now they're just overwhelmed.
I don't trust the New York Times. I don't trust any liberals. Hell, I don't even trust most of the folks who are supposed to be, quote, on the right when it comes to news. Because everybody reports what they think somebody else wants to hear.
If YouTube sees itself as, in your words, free speech maximalists, how does the company talk about this particular instance of Elmer Williams and the Sunday church shooting videos? What do they say about it?
Well, they didn't say much when I first called them on Tuesday afternoon to sort of ask them about this account and the videos that Elmer was putting out. They said they would get back to me with a statement and look into it. And then a couple hours later, his account just disappeared. Mm. All of his videos were deleted. His account was gone. His profile said this user has been terminated due to violations of YouTube's policies on hate speech. And essentially, he had been cut out of YouTube.
Hmm.
This is not Elmer's first run-in with YouTube's hate speech policies. He had a previous account that was much bigger than his latest account that was also banned for violating hate speech policies. And then he, you know, essentially made a new page and kept making his videos and started building his following back up.
Is there an argument for leaving this kind of content up on YouTube? Is there a worry that a reporter like you or me or anyone can just object and trigger a series of events that lead to these videos being taken down?
There are two things here. One is, should people like Elmer Williams be allowed to post to YouTube? And arguably the answer to that is yes. I mean, these are free platforms. They should be available no matter what your political persuasion is.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another question entirely about what responsibility YouTube has to keep videos like Elmer's from showing up in search results for breaking news stories. So when people are desperate for information, when there is a big ongoing crisis, and the first thing that people are being served are these conspiracy theory videos, I think that's where YouTube needs to step in and make a change.
You could see the argument in which an Elmer Williams might point to a major news organization, an NBC or a New York Times or a CNN, and say, well, what about that moment that they were wrong? Why did their search result become the most relevant?
Yeah, he actually made this argument in quite an impassioned way.
I have zero respect for the New York Times. I have zero respect for the fraud at Miss NBC. Because if you're so outraged with fake news, you need to actually be outraged with your own damn networks, your own damn papers.
So I think that there are complaints that this amounts to censoring conservatives or people with unpopular opinions.
This is what they do. They're always talking about tolerance, always talking about free speech, always talking about tolerate their BS. But do they ever tolerate us? Hell to the no. That's why I'm not.
Some of the alt-right tech platforms that have emerged in the last few months are supposed to be safe havens for this kind of speech. But I think the real sort of big picture implication here is that we've been so focused on Russian interference. There's a much, much bigger problem out there, which is domestic misinformation. And I think if we just focus on what Russia did last year, we miss out on this much larger information war that is happening all over the internet. And YouTube is just a tiny part of that.
Kevin, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Here's what else you need to know today. 10 days after President Trump said he was frustrated with the Justice Department for not investigating Hillary Clinton and other Democrats, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has asked officials to look into appointing a special counsel to do so. The special counsel would investigate reports of misconduct at the Clinton Foundation and the Obama administration's uranium deal with Russia. The Times reports that people close to the White House believe that in appointing a special counsel, Sessions might stop the president from firing him, as Trump has hinted he may want to do. And on Monday, Iranians searched for survivors of the magnitude 7.3 earthquake that struck near the Iraqi border over the weekend, the world's deadliest earthquake so far this year. By Monday evening, Iranian officials said the rescue mission was nearly over, with more than 450 people killed and thousands injured. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.